Training camp is underway. Players have reported. Coaches have talked to the media. We'll hear from Coach O and Coach Napier. David Griffin said it was miserable. He lost his love of the game doing what he had to do working with LeBron. Boy, is he happy now. And so should Houston Astro fans. Wow. Insurance and a run for World Series glory is certainly in the offing. All these stories, plus the New Orleans Saints back on the practice field today, Thursday. It's August 1st, 2019.
First pitch. Swing and a ground ball right field. Base hit. Around third, Altherr's being waved home. Jay up with it. He will not make a throw to the plate. Altherr scores standing. Davis stops at second. And on at first with an RBI single is Todd Frazier. The Mets are leading by a score of 2-1.
Pitch. Swung on and drilled to deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. He got a first ball fastball and drilled it deep to left and out. Romy, my homie, he hits a two-run dinger to left. And the Yankees take a 4-3 lead.
Tribe up 7-4.
Kipnis with a drive. High, deep to right. There she goes. The Indians' third three-run home run of the night. The Indians' fourth bomb of the night. And the Indians are hammering the Astros 10-4 here in inning number six.
Another night of baseball in the American League. The Yankees win. Their winning percentage now at .636. The Astros lose. Their winning percentage dips a little bit. They both have 69 wins in the season. The Astros at .633 with an 8-game lead over the Oakland A's. But insurance on the way in Zach Greinke. Good afternoon and welcome. Welcome, welcome. Everybody talks about the start of college football when SEC media days begin. I'm not that person. I'm not that person. You know when I know football starts? Is when Sam Nader gets his camp binder under his arm and makes the journey across campus to where the players are housed for camp check-in. That happened today. Sam Nader in his 45th season at LSU. 45 years. You think he's seen a thing or two, heard a thing or two, and has kept quiet about a lot? Absolutely. Camp is underway. Yes, indeed. Players have checked in. Both Ed Orgeron for the Tigers, Billy Napier for the Raging Cajuns have addressed the media. Now they'll have their team meetings this afternoon, this evening. They'll get on the field starting tomorrow with the goal in mind, keep my best players healthy. Keep them healthy. Get them sharp. Get them ready. You see, you train. It's Tommy Moffitt's job at LSU as the strength and conditioning coach to get the players in shape for camp. Camp gets you in shape for football. It's easy. It's a whole different thing, lifting weights and running in shorts and a T-shirt. And you got to have that to get ready for camp. Now you put the pads on, you get ready for football. Absolutely. Clint Domain, my producer extraordinaire, who is in the master control suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, KLWB, 103.7 The Game, has been working fervishly. We brought you The Ed Orgeron press conference. It lasted about 20 minutes. It was live here on 103.7 The Game. All the while, CD was on campus at UL, and he's got sound from Billy Napier as well. So we will hear from both head coaches later on in the program. Chandler Rome will join us in about 7 minutes of the Houston Chronicle to talk about the Chronicles of the Astros. I love the fact that they're really, really good, but they go out and try and get even better. I just love their attitude and their commitment to excellence. Justin Verlander, Garrett Cole, Zach Greinke, Miley. How's that for four starters in your rotation? That's a playoff rotation right there, and they are the front runners to win the World Series. So we'll hear from Chandler Rome and the excitement in the city of Houston concerning the Astros. I know it's football season, but David Griffin told Sports Illustrated, the executive vice president of the Pelicans, he detailed the challenges of his three seasons working with LeBron James as Cleveland's general manager. He said the experience was miserable, and now he questions James's winning instinct in Los Angeles. He said, quote, everything we did was so inorganic and unsustainable and, frankly, not fun. I was miserable. Literally, the moment we won the championship, I knew I was going to leave. There was no way I was going to stay for any amount of money. David Griffin went on to say that winning a title in his home state has also affected LeBron James's mindset on the court. There wasn't a lot else for him. I don't think he's the same animal anymore about winning. Griffin told Sports Illustrated that he privately wept the night the Cavaliers won the title, saying he was so obsessed with winning that he didn't love the game anymore. Griffin parted ways with the Cavs in June 2017 with his contract set to expire at the end of that month. Cleveland's loss, New Orleans' gain. He doesn't have to worry about LeBron anymore. He is putting together his kind of a team, and that's awesome. That's awesome. So, a little storyline there for you and yours. Oh, the Saints got back on the practice field, and if you thought that Drew Brees had lost something, the NFL Network came up with their top 100 players of 2019. At number one was Aaron Donald, the defensive tackle of the Rams. I have no problem with that at all. He is an impact force every time he puts his hand in the dirt. At number two, Drew Brees, ahead of Pat Mahomes, ahead of Tom Brady, ahead of Aaron Rodgers, the first quarterback, the first offensive player on the list. Drew Brees at number two. How about that? At number 13, Michael Thomas. At number 14, Alvin Kamara. We'll talk with Bob Rose in hour number two of Canal Street Chronicles how the Saints had to get this done with Michael Thomas. They had to do it. They were the first team to pay a quarterback $100 million with an average of $20 million a year with Drew Brees back in 2012. They're the first NFL team to pay a wide receiver $100 million, averaging $20 million a year, this time in 2019 with Michael Thomas. With him, you're a Super Bowl contender. Without him, you got no shot. Had to do it. It sends a message in my book. Those two players, if you produce, if you're a leader in the locker room, if you don't cause any troubles, and you're great in the community, the New Orleans Saints will reward you. And that's what they have done. So we'll talk to Bob Rose about that. Cody Worsham will join us as well, LSU's digital media director. And we'll talk LSU football. We'll talk a little LSU hoops with him. Of course, we'll have hot topics as well. So we got a busy show planned for you and yours. Yesterday, we had some technical issues. No one's fault. It just happens sometimes. But we have corrected that with the hardworking people involved at Delta Media, far smarter than I. Thank God, because I couldn't do it. But we've got it all ironed out. So let's take our first time out of the day. Astros pull the trigger, kind of like what they did in 2017 at the deadline, at the wire. Let's see if this one works out as good as that one did. Chandler Rome joins us next. Baseball, then a lot of football coming your way today on the Jordy Helfrich Show. 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
All right, welcome back. 17 minutes after the hour. Lots of football sound coming your way. Coach Orgeron, Billy Napier, but we cover the Astros. We air their games on this station, and at the deadline, much like they did in 2017 when they acquired Justin Verlander at the 23rd hour of the trade deadline, they do it again as Zach Greinke comes over from the Arizona Diamondbacks for four prospects. Chandler Rome, our good friend, covers the Astros for the Houston Chronicle. Chandler, good afternoon, buddy. How are you?
I finally got some sleep, so I'm good in that regard. But it's been quite a busy last 36, 48 hours in Cleveland.
Were you surprised that at this trade that was made?
So I'll tell you a story. On Tuesday night, the night before the trade deadline, after the game was over, I got a phone call from a person I know who told me that this person told me that he had heard that the Astros ran on Zach Greinke, to which I dismissed him as being pretty crazy because the optics, just none of it spoke Astros with how much Greinke was making, his salary, how much the Astros had already committed to players on their team, and the fact that Greinke was going to start on Wednesday, the day of the trade deadline. So when I woke up on the deadline day, I made sure Greinke was still starting, which he was. This never happens with pitchers that are going to get dealt. If teams even think they're going to trade a pitcher, they go ahead and scratch him from their start. But Zach Greinke threw five innings in New York, and then a rain delay came, and Jeff Luno and Mike Hazen, the GM of the Diamondbacks, kind of finally settled some things in the last 20 minutes of the deadline, and this deal happened. So I wasn't surprised just in that someone had told me, don't be surprised if it happens. So I wasn't, but when you start looking at it and what the prospects the Astros gave up, the money that they're going to pay Zach Greinke and the salary they're going to take on and what it does to their payroll, it's a signal of you know, just how committed the Astros are to this new era and committed to keeping their window open for as long as possible, because Zach Greinke's a guy that not only is going to help this season, but in the next season and the season after that, because he and Verlander are under team control for the same amount of time. So as long as Verlander's here, Zach Greinke's going to be here too, and that's a 1-2 punch for the next 3 years. It's pretty formidable.
It is very formidable, no question about that. Chandler Rome, what was the buzz around the clubhouse when it was announced that Greinke was coming over?
So it was pretty funny, honestly. The deal was announced right around the time that the clubhouse was supposed to open to the media. That's when the deal broke. And the team closed the clubhouse to the media, and A.J. Hinch had a team meeting with his team. And he was trying to turn the TVs off as quick as possible so he could be the one that broke the news to the team if they had Zach Greinke. But he was unsuccessful. It broke on TV to a couple of the guys, and then there was just a lot of hoop and hollering from what I understand. It was a very lively and energetic team meeting. They're pumped, and this is something that, you know, it was talked about throughout the deadline, whether what the clubhouse morale would be like if the Astros didn't do anything at the deadline. I don't think it would have faded at all. I think this team was still pretty close and still knew how good they were and how confident that they were in themselves. But getting this done really was a lift and a boost to a clubhouse that didn't really need it, but this is just going to give them all the motivation they need to finish this all off and to try to win their second World Series in 3 years.
I am with you completely. You just stole my thunder. It just tells me that players see in management a team, a group that is willing to do whatever it takes to put the best product out there. When you have Verlander, Gerrit Cole, Zach Greinke, and Wade Miley, they combined for 45 wins and 17 losses with a combined ERA of 2.90. I mean, Alex Bregman, Correa, Altuve, Springer, they got to be like, man, look, we're going to bust our butt even more so because look what management's done for us. It's a win-win.
Right, and they are they're the best team, certainly in the American League on paper now and probably in baseball, but I think, and A.J. Hinch cautioned his team about this yesterday. He said these exact words. He said, this is not an excuse to start a layup line. This is not a move where we can just coast to the end of the year. They have to keep playing well. They have to keep playing well in October because I think as we've seen, October baseball, anything can happen. And it's very rare in baseball that the best team on paper wins. That happened last year with the Red Sox. They were the best team from probably the beginning of the year to the end, and they won the World Series. But that's not the norm. You know, you have to get a little bit lucky. You have to have big-time players step up in October, and you have to avoid injury. And I think it all starts, you know, honestly on the mound, and the Astros have done everything they can now to make sure that they're going to have the best four starters of any team in the postseason this year, and it's not really close.
Yeah. No, it really isn't. Chandler Rome, Houston Chronicle. Given the fact that you mentioned he just pitched, when does it look like Greinke will make his where would you guess he'll make his debut for the Astros?
I would imagine it would be on Tuesday against the Rockies at Minute Maid Park. As far as I know, Greinke is not with the team in Cleveland right now, and neither are John Biagini or Aaron Sanchez, the two pitchers acquired from the Blue Jays. So I think we may be a little bit scant on information even again today because A.J. Hinch, admittedly, yesterday, he's never met Zach Greinke. He's never met Aaron Sanchez, and he's never met Joe Biagini. So they have to kind of get to know these guys first and see what they're comfortable doing and all that kind of stuff. So a lot is sort of unknown right now, but if you're going just on regular rest and kind of how it would line up, Greinke would probably start on Tuesday against the Rockies, and Aaron Sanchez may start on Saturday against the Mariners in Minute Maid Park.
Had anybody on the team have any relationship with him? Has anybody ever played on the team with him, whether at the Dodgers or the Diamondbacks? Anybody know what kind of, what kind of person is Zach Greinke? We know what he does when he's got the ball in his hand. He's pretty darn good. But what about the locker room?
Well, Martin Maldonado is the only active Astro that's played with him. He caught him in Milwaukee in 2012. And I talked to Maldonado last night about Greinke. And Maldonado, compared to Justin Verlander in a lot of different ways, they pitch a lot differently. Greinke is not he's an older pitcher just like Verlander, but he's not an overpowering guy. There's no forcing him up. There's no curveball. It's a lot more command, a lot more finesse, things like that. But Maldonado said that kind of the way they prepare is very similar, and their rigid preparation and how they go about their business. He said catching Greinke is like catching Verlander, and that's so. You can expect that sort of preparation and that sort of veteran presence to come in. As far as what he's like off the field, this has been kind of written about a little bit, but he's very reserved. He's a quiet guy. He took some time away from baseball a couple of years ago because he battled depression, and he got some social. I think he's been pretty forthright that he's been diagnosed with social anxiety disorder. So he's a little bit of a he's not. And not that this is a bad thing, but he's a little bit reclusive, and he's probably not going to be the guy that's hooting and hollering and leading clubhouse cheers and things like that. But, you know, it takes all kinds to make a clubhouse, and I think he'll be much more of a lead by example and guy that a lot of people can look up to as to how he goes about his business on a day-to-day basis.
Make that noise every fifth day. Everything will be fine. Everything comes with a cost. The Astros built this team up because they were really, really smart with their farm system, how they built it up and develop players. You lose four prospects. What does that do to the farm system now?
It puts it in a really, really thin position. I will say the fact that Jeff Lurie was able to orchestrate this deal and keep Forrest Whitman and Kyle Tucker was pretty remarkable. But I think when you look at the system now, when you get past Tucker and Whitman, there's not much after it. And then the Astros, I was in about 3 or 4 years, where their task is to replenish. They've got to replenish their farm system. J.D. Bukauskas and Corbin Martin were really two of their huge pieces of starting pitching depth at the upper minor leagues. They don't have much of that now beyond Forrest Whitley. Seth Beer was a guy that a lot of people thought maybe in the next year or two could be up at the Astros and be playing first base, maybe when Yuli Gurriel leaves. So they're going to have to find something internally to bolster their first base depth. And then Josh Rojas is a guy that he really had a breakout year in the minor leagues this year. He's a guy that plays all four infield positions. He plays some outfield. He's a utility guy, just kind of a grinder, a scrappy guy. OPS like 900 in AAA this year. So it really came out of nowhere. So I think the one thing that you'll see, though, with this return is none of the four were going to impact the Astros in the next 2 years. And that's because Corbin Martin had Tommy John surgery, so he's out till 2021. J.D. Bukauskas and Seth Beer were both still at Double-A. So you're looking at maybe middle of next year at the earliest thereof. And then Josh Rojas, like I mentioned, was kind of blocked because even though he's a utility guy and plays all around the field, the Astros are pretty entrenched all around with their position players, and their bench is pretty set as well. So none of these four guys were going to be immediate impact guys for the Astros in the next 2 years. So in that sense, they did okay, that they've got now 2 years to really get that farm system back up and running to where it's more than just Kyle Tucker and Forrest Whitley.
Chandler Rome, Houston Chronicle in Cleveland, chronicling the Zach Greinke trade. It's going to be fun down the stretch. This is going to be a fun team, even more so to watch. Thank you for your time, my friend. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Jordy.
All right, buddy. This is Chandler Rome, Astros. Favorites now, co-favorites to win the World Series. We'll take a timeout. Back to football. We'll hear from Coach O. We'll hear from Billy Napier as we roll on this Thursday, the first day of August. Hot dog, we're here, baby. We'll be right back.
Who's got game and who's the next big thing at LSU? Jordy Hultberg will set you straight on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Minutes after the hour, welcome back. Hooters just makes you happy. Ambassador Caffrey Parkway, renovated, all brand new. Great sight lines to see every sporting event. Fantasy football drafts, line them up. Get ready. They're filling up fast. Get your fantasy league and get it going at Hooters, because Hooters just makes you happy. Well, LSU's beating as a team as we speak right now. Prior to that, players checked into their domiciles at Orgeron, met with the media for about 20 minutes. We carried it live here at 1:30 on 103.7 The Game. We've got some sound that Clint cut up for us. And we'll start with Coach O talking about the message, cut number nine, the message he gave the team yesterday.
No question. That will be the message today. And they know it. We talked to them. We had a big dinner the Sunday night, and they were wild. They were fired up about it. But now the expectations are raised. And they've given us the best. We got to give them our best. We're going to give our very best. There'll be no doubt about that.
Too much is given, as much is expected. And Coach O was talking about the new football operations center with the sleep pods and the nutrition center and all that. He said, look, we're not going to wear caps. We're not going to bring food in the locker room. We're going to treat this place with respect. We're going to treat it like it's home. We're going to keep it neat and clean so this thing will be able to be used for years and years to come. To the football field, cut number eight. Coach, what's the main focus for camp this year?
You know, today, really, then when I meet with them at 2:15, it's going to be how we act in that new facility. And, there's some housekeeping things that we got to take care of. We got to treat out that's like our home with respect. I know our guys will, but I want to make sure, like no caps when we're eating, you know, no food in the locker room, stuff like that. That they haven't been told yet because it's a new place. I want to make sure that we respect the place. And then tonight we're going to talk about blocking out the noise, about focusing on camp and the things that we need to get better at. Again, line of scrimmage discipline. We got to get better on the offensive line and defensive line.
Got to get better. Coach O talked about the defense, cut number three. Got to get a better pass rush, no question.
On defense, we have a lot of talent. We got a lot of speed. We got to figure out a way to make tackles in the backfield and sacks. We want to be more aggressive in the things that we do, changing up some stuff that we do up front, some coverages. We think it's going to be exciting.
Two camps ago, Coach O said, man, I don't think we have two lines on either side of the ball. He says now they're three deep on the offensive line and the defensive line. He talked about the depth, cut number six, because you got to win. You win games at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, we talked about that this morning. I can remember two camps ago, we didn't have two lines. And Coach Grimes did a tremendous job. He said, Coach, I'm going to get them ready. I think we played three freshmen. Now we're three deep. We're developing guys. Guys are competing. We're three deep on both the offensive and defensive line, so we have a lot more depth there. And we're developing guys. Some guys are going to have to come along this year. You know, I reminded the staff this morning that last year we lost eight defensive starters, and we had to play with some new guys in a bowl game where we won it. So everybody's on the roster got to be ready to play.
Including their nose tackles, Acadiana's finest, Tyler Shelvin, and another newcomer in Apu Ika. And Coach O talked about, you know, Dave Aranda, for the first time since he's been at LSU, actually has some big space-eating nose tackles. And Coach O talked about the two of them.
Nose tackle, Apu Ika and Tyler Shelvin. Let's see who's in best condition. We went over it this morning that Tyler's 343. That's the lightest he's been. Tommy Moffitt feels that Tyler's in the best shape he's been. Apu's at 353. He's in good shape. That is going to be a battle. You know, you have Glenn Logan. You have Rashard Lawrence. You have Braden Fajoko. Who's going to start out of those three when we go to four-man line inside? That'll be a big battle. There'll be a big battle on the green team. Who's going to be our four best rushers? There'll be a big battle at tailback. Who's going to be our best tailback? Who's going to be number two, number three? Big battle at offensive line. Who's going to be our left guard? Well, that's wide open.
Wide open. Lots of things to go over with camp. But you can hear it. You can see it. You can feel it. Old Coach O, he's cut number two. He's really excited about this Steve Ensminger, Joe Brady, Joe Burrow offense.
We're excited about offense. Excited about the guys coming back, Joe and Miles. And excited to see Peter. I haven't seen Peter at all yet. I can't wait to see him. I saw him at camp. Excited about our running backs. Excited about our receivers. Excited about Stephon Sullivan playing tight end. About Thaddeus Moss. Those guys had excellent, excellent summers. Along with Torrey Carter, we got to get better at the tight end position. But the focus on camp is going to be the line of scrimmage. And getting better at the line of scrimmage. Line of scrimmage discipline. Eliminate pre-snap penalties, pass protection, run blocking. And we got to develop a great offensive line. I know Coach Craig is ready to do that.
He mentioned Stephon Sullivan. Can Sullivan be cut number five? Can he be the Jimmy Graham of LSU football?
Yeah, I think watching Jimmy Graham plays with Joe Brady kind of sold him, you know, really. And we can do the same things that we did with Jimmy Graham. With Stephon, I'm not saying he's that, but we can run the same type of plays, and he can be the same type of player. So I think he's totally bought into that, and I think that's the big reason.
Team's loaded. There's no question. Again, camp, you get somehow, some way, and it's such a fine line. Boy, if you can avoid injury. It's a contact sport. I understand that. And there are going to be injuries. But hopefully those will be of the minor type. And, you know, with the great medical staff and the medical facilities that LSU has, if that does occur, they'll get them back and running. There has been one injury already, and we haven't even lined it up. We haven't even stepped on the field yet. Coach O talked about the first casualty.
Dennis Johnson had a severe injury playing basketball, hurt both of his knees pretty bad. He's in a wheelchair right now. He's doing okay. So we went through compliance, and luckily we got Kenichi Udizi, who coached at USC and has been a D-line coach on the field. I have Christian Nakature, who's a graduate assistant, who also can coach on the field, and I'll be involved in the defensive line. Dennis will do the job upstairs, the coaching in the meeting room, but it's impossible for him to coach the defensive line on the field, so we got a waiver, so Kenichi will coach on the field. So you'll see that out there. And we wish Dennis a speedy process. He's a great young man. Unfortunate injury. He's going to be in a wheelchair, both legs up in the up in there. Can't walk right now, but he's fighting through it. He'll be okay.
Why do all these football players want to play basketball? Why do these football coaches want to play hoops? They're going to get hurt. They just are. But anyway, that's just the way it goes. Dante Starks, not a part of the team. No new word on Ed Ingram. That's it. Safety Mo Hampton, the two-sport star, will be limited a little bit by a broken bone in his hand. So, again, they're meeting now. They're going to get fitted for equipment and go through their physicals and all that. They'll have another team meeting tonight, and then they'll get on the field. So that's the very latest from Coach O and the LSU Tigers. Meanwhile, the Raging Cajuns had a press conference today as well with Billy Napier coming through with this opening statement for the day.
I think we've made tons of progress in terms of the knowledge that we've acquired. I think we've gotten smarter, but this certainly this next month will be a big step in that area. And then fundamentally, you know, one of the areas where I think in year two you'll see a significant change. And then, you know, probably the most important thing is what type of team we're going to have. You know, the togetherness, the chemistry. This will be our first opportunity as an entire organization to work together. You know, the staff, new group of players on the grass. I think we've got a proven plan. Certainly it's gotten better. You know, taking a good look at some of the tweaks that we've made. But how we execute that plan is ultimately going to decide how far we go. So that'll be the most critical factor. We've got to be very intentional about what we do. Got to be very deliberate about how we practice and choose our words wisely and try to create intensity and urgency as a staff. And, you know, the big thing we talked to the staff earlier about is year two, the new level of discipline, a new level of detail. And we look forward to, you know, seeing what we can get out of this group.
Look, this is a young team, a very young team. 70% of the roster are in their first or second year of college football. That's why I said we have to choose our words wisely. Attention to detail, maybe be a little bit more patient than Ed Orgeron has because he's got a veteran lineup. It's different. Here's Billy Napier talking about the unknowns of this year's Raging Cajun team.
You know, we got 86 players that are going into their first or second year on our team. You know, that's almost close to 70% of the roster. So lots of unknowns, you know, I think, and lots of room for improvement. You know, I think that's one of the things that's unique about training camp. We kind of start over. There's going to be tons of competition, lots of roles to be earned. And that's what we're getting ready to do. You know, I think we've got a lot of players who have invested, had tremendous off seasons, learned from last year, and then a group of rookies that is chomping at the bit to, you know, make a contribution to the team. So we'll be a work in progress, just like most football teams each and every week.
Look, he likes his club, albeit they're young. Maybe some are, you know, not privy to what college football is all about, but you got to get on the fast track and you got to learn. But it helps when you have selfless players.
We're fortunate that we've got a bunch of selfless players, very much humble team guys that maybe different weeks, you know, they were the featured player or maybe they got the most touches. You know, we're going to get certain guys the ball, you know, and I think we've got – it is one of the things that we take note of throughout the game as a play caller. I want to make sure that, you know, Ray Calais had his chance, you know, if that if he's just one good example of that.
All right, now, it all starts at the quarterback position, and he's turned heads, Levi Lewis. Here are the expectations, according to his head coach, for Lewis.
Well, I think I've had an opportunity to observe him work for probably 4 or 5 more months, you know, just to see how he's attacked this offseason. I think he did get quite a bit of experience, and I think that proved to be very beneficial. Certainly played a little bit that first year he was here. But second year in the system, just playing much faster. You know, anticipates better. I think he's processing quicker. He's gotten a lot smarter. He's acquired so much knowledge. I think he has a good grasp of what the other side of the ball is doing to him. And that leads to better decisions, better anticipation, process quicker. Now he's more accurate. He's always been a really good athlete. He's always had plenty of arm talent. And he's always been one of the most respected players on the entire team. So you take those things, and then now we have had a year to kind of study and adapt to maybe some things that we can do to feature him. And he's got good competition around him, you know, and it always makes us better. So very pleased with Levi. Certainly had a great summer. Took ownership of our team. A lot of optional activities where the quarterback really decides how well that's going to go. So he's better, and he's going to keep getting better.
They expect a lot out of him. They also need to do on the defensive side, they got to figure out a way to get teams to turn the ball over. They've got to force more turnovers to the point Billy Napier stressed it today.
I think every player that's coming back, you know, that has significant experience will play faster, anticipate better. You know, it's not necessarily what to do all the time. Now it's about why are we doing this way, you know, this, how do we do it? You know, I think the biggest thing is we're going to play better situational football and we'll be better fundamentally.
So the Raging Cajuns open up in the Superdome against Mississippi State. The Tigers open up at home in Death Valley against Georgia Southern. Kind of a SEC Sun Belt double dip, right? Kind of a double dip. So very interesting. But you can tell by, look, Coach O knows he's got a good team. He knows it. But as he said, they're going to turn out the noise. The low expectations fueled them a year ago. Fueled them. Now we'll see how they handle being the hunted rather than the hunter. And year two under Billy Napier, we'll see how much improvement the Raging Cajuns make. Because I've always said, you've heard me say this so many times, if you're thinking out there, you're a step or two behind. Now that they've had Napier and this staff under their belt for a year, now it'll be reaction. And they'll be a lot quicker and a lot better. And the schedule for both teams, a lot more serviceable than a year ago. I think both coaches would agree to that. It's a lot more manageable and favorable. So a lot of meetings now, equipment fitting, all the important things, physicals, and a lot of nerves. Trust me, a lot of nerves, particularly with the newcomers, of what in the world is going to happen tomorrow. Because you know what happens? All the recruiting's out of the way when they're saying, boy, you're the greatest thing ever. And, man, you just, man, we need you. Now, well, it's a whole different story. Now it's time to produce. It's time to, and Coach O says it all the time. Every coach, look, that's fine. You produce like Grant Delpit. I want to wear number 7, Coach. You produce, you can wear 2 sevens. How many sevens do you want? And, oh, by the way, the number 18 will be announced for LSU at their team meeting this evening. Coach O knows who it is. It's either going to be Joe Burrow or Rashard Lawrence, or could there ever be a center with the number 18, Lloyd Cushenberry? Nah, I don't think. It's going to be either Burrow or Lawrence. Quarterbacks are kind of funny about numbers. You don't see quarterbacks changing numbers very, very, very much. So I'm gonna go with Ed Lawrence as the recipient of that number. We shall see. We'll talk about that tomorrow. So camp gets started tomorrow. Everybody is 0-0. Everybody is enthusiastic. Day one is going to be, man, they're going to be so fired up. They're going to be running through their shoes. But it's a long journey, man. It's a long journey. Keep injury free. And how quickly can players learn the playbook? And how quickly can they produce? Both teams should be better than they were a year ago. LSU had 10 wins. They could be really good. All right, we'll take a timeout. Thanks to CB for getting all that sound together on such quick, short notice. But that's why he's the best. We'll be back. Wrap up hour number one next.
You're listening to the Jordy Holmberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
All right, wrapping up hour number one here. Busy hour number two. Cody Worsham, LSU Digital Media Director, will join us after our daily Hot Topic segment. Bob Rose will join us to talk about the New Orleans Saints. And Drew Brees named the number two player by the NFL Network. As far as importance, Aaron Donald of the Rams, number one, Drew Brees, number two. A lot of people forget that Brees posted the sixth highest single-season passer rating in NFL history last year, graded higher than any other quarterback in the league by Pro Football Focus. He's 40 years old, going to turn 41 this season. Come playoff time, knock on wood. So Drew Brees playing at an elite level, and he's got his sidekick Michael Thomas back. He's got a new tight end weapon in Jared Cook, and who's going to be that other go-to receiver? Emmanuel Butler did not practice today, so apparently that injury was a little bit more than we expected. So hopefully he has not taken a step back, and when he does come back, he can continue to elevate his game as he has. He's been the talk of camp so far. But practice is one thing. Producing in games is a whole nother thing. And the Saints have proven if you produce on the field, if you're great in the locker room, if you're a leader of the team, and if you're a leader in the community, they will reward you, as they did Drew Brees in 2012 and continue to do, and as they did with Michael Thomas, the $20 million a year wide receiver, the most highest paid wide receiver in the history of the game. Oh, it's going to be a good football season. Oh, it's going to be good. Yes, indeed. No question. We're brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets with over 60 in southern and central Louisiana. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you can't shop right at all. Hour number one in the books. Come on back. Hour number two, the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7 The Game.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck it out, and the
This is the Jordy Holtberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Holtberg.
Hour number two of two. Happy Thursday to you and yours. It's the first day of August, and formal enshrinement into the Pro Football Hall of Fame will take place this Saturday, August 3rd, Canton, Ohio. The class of 2019 with Champ Bailey, Pat Bowlen, Gil Brandt, Tony Gonzalez, Ty Law, and then three from our great state of Louisiana, Ed Reed, and two former LSU Tigers, Kevin Mawai and the legendary Johnny Robinson. Can you imagine how excited they all are? Holy cow, this Saturday. Busy second hour. We'll talk LSU football, basketball with Cody Worsham. We'll talk Saints training camp with Bob Rose. But first, as we do each and every day, at this specific time of the day, we take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, hit that button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, my man, how are you today, big guy? You've been busy, huh?
Oh, it's been a busy last couple hours. Jordy, coming straight from the media day for Cajuns training camp, getting started today. Talked to a lot of players, then rolled over here a little after 1 o'clock, and got here just in time to kind of set everything up and get it ready for Ed Ogeron's time at the podium. So definitely my transition game's on point, Jordy. Not necessarily certain I'm going to be playing a pickup game like Dennis Johnson did.
Oh, my God. Please don't. And Dennis Johnson only wishes a happy birthday to the greatest defensive lineman in LSU football history as far as awards are concerned, Glenn Dorsey, celebrating a birthday today. So what you got for me, big guy?
Jordy, we got a lot to get to. I was very disappointed with the fact that, you know, we weren't able to do a live show, obviously, with all of the trade deadline talk. Mind you, this one would have wound up slipping under the radar. And that was obviously the biggest trade of them all, Jordy, and that was the Astros getting Zach Greinke from the Arizona Diamondbacks. Mind you, they gave up a lot of prospects, but when you think about it, the amount of talent they have on the main roster, it is going to be incredibly tough to make that team if you're a prospect. So it makes a lot of sense to send some of those guys over, not Forrest Whitley, not Kyle Tucker, two guys that they definitely have their eye on to be long-term faces of the franchise. But, Jordy, how much has this helped the Astros' chances of being World Series contenders to have that solid four-man rotation?
Oh, it's a playoff pitching staff. There's no question about that. What I like about it more than anything else, management has sent a message to those everyday players. Look, we're good. We know we're good. But we're going to give you a little bit more so we can be even better. We're going to do everything we can to put us in the best position to win a World Series. Bregman, Altuve, Correa, Springer, the rest of those guys are all going to they're running through a wall now. Not that they wouldn't already, but they got to be fired up with this one. I mean that pitching staff is the best in baseball. So kudos to the Astros management ownership for doing what they did. The morale has got to be through the roof. Even more so with the acquisition of Greinke.
Oh, trust me, Jordy, the hype is all too real with this franchise. In fact, you look at Vegas right now from Caesars, this is coming from the World Series odds have been updated. The Astros are co-favorites currently alongside the Dodgers after landing Greinke. So it's definitely safe to say that this is probably going to wind up being the favorite coming out of the American League. But, Jordy, hopping over to the NFL, Steven Jackson, he announced he was going to retire and sign a one-day contract to retire as a Los Angeles Ram for everything they did with him, especially early on in his career, Jordy. But the NFL decided, you know what? We're going to select you for a random drug test despite signing that one-day contract. Is that just ridiculous?
Oh, my God. That is the worst I have ever heard. That's awful.
It's amazing to think about the fact, like, the NFL is trying to drug test a guy that is retired, done. But the best part is he went on Twitter and put, Dear NFL, can you tell Mr. Lombardo that I signed a one-day contract? I will not be reporting you today for my random drug test screening. Thanks in advancement. Hashtag retirement life.
Yes. Good for him. NFL, come on.
Get it together.
There's far more pressing matters than this. Who in their infinite wisdom, what jackass came up with that scenario? That's all I can say.
Yes, I love it, Jordy. I have to agree with you on that one wholeheartedly. One thing we didn't get to yesterday, and this is nothing I'm disappointed about, and that was that epic brawl between the Cincinnati Reds, and the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Wow.
With just suspensions abound. But the best part of it was Amir Garrett throwing a punch and completely and utterly missing anything that is any body. It was amazing just to watch the slow-mo replay of him just completely whiffing on a punch.
The whiff. It's like he shot an air ball. He was a great basketball prospect coming out of high school. That was a big dude running running toward the Pirates. Obviously, these two teams don't like one another. And good old Yasiel Puig got his blows in as the last time he's a Cincinnati Red. He's gone. It's just crazy, man. That I've never seen anything quite like that. What, he just sprinted off the mound.
It was amazing.
And just started running right to the dugout. One against 25.
Yes.
What was he thinking?
He was thinking, I'm going to get my shots in. I'll get suspended for a few games, but I'm tired of these dudes chirping at me. The best part is, Jordy, they play seven more times.
Oh, my God. I know what you want. You wanted to be in the WWE so he can introduce him. He can run down that path, jump into the ring with his arm and punch. And they miss on punches on purpose.
Oh, yes.
It would be great. The opponent would fall down. He'd be a hero. Yes.
It'd be amazing, Jordy. But Vince McMahon is already kind of writing this down for stuff for Monday night when they go back on television. Because, he loved to have a little fun at their expense. But we had to kind of get it serious for a minute, Jordy, because the suspensions came down for the epic brawl. Amir Garrett, 8 games. Yasiel Puig, only 3 games, mainly because I feel like Amir Garrett and Keone Kella was suspended 10 games with the main instigators. Yasiel Puig was kind of in the aftermath of it all, but he wanted the smoke as well.
With the picture, that's 8 days. What does he miss? Maybe 2 starts at the most?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. But look, baseball, just put nets up. Put nets up down the first baseline, third baseline, all the way to the outfield. Just put the nets up and, let's do that. Let's do that, please.
Well, they've already started to put up some of the nets, and there's a cool video. I'll send it to you. But before we wrap up, Jordy, Melvin Gordon requests in a trade from the Los Angeles Chargers if they don't increase his $10 million a year offer. Has, the Michael Thomas signing open up Pandora's box for a lot of these skill players, like a running back or a wide receiver, Jordy?
Melvin Gordon ain't in the same league as Michael Thomas. Melvin Gordon, even his quarterback said, we'll go practice with what we've got, and we got a pretty good group as is. So I don't think they're going to miss Melvin Gordon, and they don't have to do anything with the guy. He's under contract. There's your Hot Topics brought by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. Do yourself a flavor. Bring the best hot sauce with you wherever you go. That's Cajun Chef. Cody Worsham next.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Humpert Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. Busy day on the campus of LSU. It's check-in day. And to me, everybody talks about SEC media days as the start of football. To me, the start of football is when Sam Nader makes his walk across campus to take his seat to check players in. He's only been doing it now. He's in his 45th year at LSU. Cody Worsham only hopes he could be there 45 years. Well, maybe not. But Cody Worsham, LSU's digital media director, kind enough to join us. 45 years for Sam Nader. Cody, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm 1 year in. I think if I can get to 30, that nice retirement check, that's going to be my goal. If I can make 3 decades, I'll be happy.
So, check-in day, things are a lot different from when I checked in, when you were carrying boxes, you were carrying your big, heavy TV, your pillows, and your blanket. Those days are over. It's just a casual stroll in the park now.
Yeah, for the most part, you know, these guys just, they show and they've got a couple things on hand, but they're not overdoing it. They're packing light. They're coming in with maybe a bag or two, and then they're signing up. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you kind of mentioned it there. A lot of people look at SEC Media Days. I'm kind of the same way. This day, when the players are actually on campus, you know who's going to be there. Coach O talks to the media for the first time. And to start camp, that kind of feels like more of the kickoff of things to me and when things really get started.
Cody Worship, but you know why they're packing light? Because they can sleep in the darn locker room now in their practice facility. They've got everything they need there.
Yeah, you know, they joked about staying there overnight. I don't think that's necessarily the design of that facility, but I wouldn't be shocked if a couple of players, you know, try it out. Those pods fold out, they can get some rest. But, you know, I do think this is the time of year. A lot of people kind of joked about the sleeping aspect of it. I think this is the time of year where that's going to be the most handy, when these guys can, you know, they get over there, they got something going on in the morning, maybe a walkthrough, maybe a practice, and then, you know, they've got weights and they've got 2 hours to kill, you know, rather than hop in the car and drive across campus or drive across Nicholson. They just stay over there. They go to the nutrition center. They get a meal. They get back in their pod, take a little 30-minute nap. You know, there's a lot of kind of joking around about that. But when you talk to any elite-level athlete, Steve Nash was really huge on this in his career. These guys are working so much, their bodies not only require more sleep, but they're getting less sleep at times because of the hours at which they're doing things. So you've got a sleep debt that you have to make up for, and those pods are going to be huge in accounting for that.
No question. I slept on many Pete Maravich. Well, it wasn't. It was just the Assembly Center locker room carpeted floor with a pillow. We did that an awful lot. So there's nothing wrong with having some comfort. I'm all for it. Good for them. Have you partaken of the Nutrition Center menu yet?
Yeah, the menu's awesome. I mean, they're doing an amazing job over there. I've eaten there. You know, I hadn't eaten there in about a week, but when it first opened, I probably ate there 3 times in 4 days, and the food is phenomenal. I mean, Chef Michael Johnson is incredible. They just hired a new nutritionist from Texas that's handling a lot of their nutrition aspects, Zach Bennett. He's doing a great job. They're feeding those guys really, really well. Those guys know what to eat, and when they go in there, they're getting, I mean, the food is not only cooked really well and the flavors are unique, but it's just really fresh. The ingredients are really, really high quality. You can really, really tell. It's like a restaurant. I mean, it's not like going to eat in the cafeteria. It's like eating in a restaurant. It's really good stuff.
He is Cody Worsham, LSU Digital Media Director. One player is not gonna show up, not going to be there for camp. Have you heard any word of anybody else, or is everybody good to go?
Yeah, I think Coach has said yesterday that the only guy that wasn't going to be at camp was Dante Starks. Everyone else, I believe, is good to go. We'll see later today when Coach O talks if anything's changed regarding that or regarding anyone else. But, you know, we were just watching guys come in and check in, and, you know, you saw all the familiar faces, the Grant Delpits and the Jacoby Stevenses and the Joe Burrows and the Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So all the big names are there so far, and we're just going to have to see what Coach O says this afternoon. But I would expect just about everybody else to show up.
I got an idea. I took a look at Chris Curry. If he doesn't get time running the ball, Devin White part two. That dude is huge.
Yeah, Chris was one of the funnier ones today coming in, because he walked in all of his sleeping materials kind of bundled up in a giant comforter or quilt of sorts, and then he fell and dropped everything on the ground. And but yeah, he's a big guy. He looks good too. You know, I thought last year maybe he was a little too heavy. He's still big, but I think he's carrying that weight better. I think he's trimmed up a little bit, added some muscle, burned some fat. And we saw in the spring game what he can do as a physical runner between the tackles. And I had heard last fall, that he had really impressed in a lot of the scrimmages and stuff that they did last fall. I thought he was really hard luck last year. Whenever he got in, mm-hmm. it seemed like I think I actually charted it out. He played like, I don't know, 12 or 13 snaps all last season. And he got carries on like 11 of them. So it's almost like the defense knew anytime he's in the game, he's going right. to run the ball. And they kind of geared up right. to stop him. Hopefully he'll get used a little bit you know, more efficiently this year. And I think he's a guy that can definitely make an impact in the run game.
Yeah, he's one of my sleepers this season. He is a huge guy. This is Cody Worsham, LSU Digital Media Director. I got to ask you, because they're getting ready to head to Spain. Will Wade sounded really, really pleased with his ball club. From their work perspective, he was fluent with his praise for Emmett Williams and the work that he's put in. Sometimes these guys go to these they get these evaluations, they come back even hungrier. So I'm glad they all went and tried that.
Yeah, I think it's better than he said that last year. I remember with Tremont, especially, that, you know, it's one thing to hear it from your coach who's on you every day and on your teammates every day. It's another thing to go to the next level and hear it from an NBA scout, an NBA GM, a guy that you maybe watched on TV when you were a kid, telling you, hey, you're not good enough at this yet. You got to get better at this. Or this is something that you can actually turn into an NBA talent if you develop it a little bit more. It means a little bit more coming from the guy who, you know, one day could control your paycheck than it does from the coach who is trying to get the best out of you every day. So, you know, it sounds like Marlon Taylor, it really hit home for him, and that's a guy that, you know, I love Marlon to death. I think he's such a character, but I think he needed that. He needed that sense of, hey, man, like, the way that you jump, you can play in this league, but you got to fix this, and this in your game, and you really got to dedicate your craft and you know, really focus and bear down. And so I think Marlon, when he gets back from this foot issue that's not very major, I think he'll get back pretty quickly and get back to working really hard. And yeah, guy like Emmett Williams, who, look, let's be honest, Emmett Williams, love him to death too, but he's 6'6". So when he gets to the next level, he's going to have to be able to step out and shoot it. And Will Wade said he's been doing that this summer. He's been making 500 threes a day. Hopefully that translates into some 3-point shooting come season time, because if he adds that to his game, that could be something really, really dangerous and make him a really special player.
And I just remember, that's made 500. Now, if Will says he's going to be a 35% 3-point shooter, at 35%, just off the top of my head, that's about 1,300 three attempts a day. That's a lot of shots, my friend.
Yeah, and look, Emmett's always been a hard worker, and I think he knew that was an element of his game he was going to have to add at some point. So this summer's kind of the perfect opportunity, and kind of embodies what this team is right now. They don't have a true five necessarily on the roster. Like, maybe Cortese Cooper develops into that or can play that. Maybe Trenton Watford can, you know, give you minutes at the five or play the five. But Emmett plays the most like a five, the way that he plays around the basket, his ability to protect the rim a little bit. So if he can give you everything that we know he's got already, the athleticism, the motor, the length, the switchability, you add in a 3-point shot, you add in some more offense. I mean, he basically was the most important player in that Kentucky win at Kentucky. He could turn into a real, real all-SEC, all-American caliber player before he's said and done.
Cody, I may be biased, but I've always said in college basketball, if you have really good guard play, you got a chance to be you got a chance to be really, really good. I don't know if there's a better backcourt. Maybe there is, but if there is, it's not by much with Javonte Smart and Skylar Mays. I mean, that's the core of your club right there, right?
Yeah, well, you know, go back to the Tennessee game last year. That was the two guys that you had to lean on in that game without Tremont Waters, with Naz Reid only scoring 1 point. Both of those guys rose to the occasion. And, you know, it's a combination of things with those guys. It's their size, you know, they're big guards, they're strong. They both can finish at the rim and play above the rim, finish through contact. They can both step out and knock down the three. They both can guard. But I think the biggest thing with them is their makeup. You know, Javonte is he's the most competitive player I've ever seen come through LSU. I mean, you know, I haven't been covering the program since 2010, so there's obviously a lot of guys that came before him, but he's just so competitive. He wants to win so badly. He's never afraid of the moment. He's never afraid of the opponent. He sets the tone. And then Skyler is just cool and calm and collected. But, you know, at times last year showed some real fire and showed some real guts. I mean, I'll never forget a couple shots. I'll never forget the shot against Tennessee that he tied it up at the top of the key and forced overtime a few seconds later. I'll never forget the shot that he hit in the NCAA tournament against Maryland to give LSU the lead late. I know Maryland came down and hit a three to tie it up and set up the Tremont Waters game winner, but that Skyler shot was huge. I mean, it was absolutely huge. So he's big in big moments. I think, you know, I think with Skyler this year, he shot it well early last year and then really struggled from three late, but was still really efficient inside the arc. I think he's going to be up near 40% from three this year. And if he does, if he adds that to his game,
wow,
which I think he's more than capable of doing, he'll be the most efficient guard in the country. I mean, I don't think there's any question about it. He doesn't turn it over. He makes free throws. Mm-hmm. Finishes at the rim. He starts making threes. He's going to be unstoppable.
All right. He is Cody Worship. By the way, do I need to put in a call to Verge and Will about, you know, Spain's right around the corner? Is the wife going to let you go with the youngsters, or are you grounded?
Yeah, I don't think I'm permitted to go on that trip. My wife is just one of the few stakeholders that has denied me permission to go on that trip. So as much as I'd love to go see the Iberian Peninsula this time of year, football requires me to be in Baton Rouge, and so I'll be covering plenty of football from on the ground here. And I'll let Kent Lowe handle the reports from Spain.
Only Cody would call it the Iberian Peninsula and not Barcelona, Madrid, and Valencia. Only you wordsmith, you.
That's what I get paid to do, Jordy. I got to come up with phrases that nobody else is using. So let's go with Iberian Peninsula.
All right, man. Go enjoy the heat, and football is here. Sam Nader made his walk. Football has arrived. Cody, thanks for the time, my friend.
Yeah, thank you, Jordy.
All right, you take care. We'll take a time out here. That brought to you by Hooters. Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway, newly renovated. And are they ready? Fantasy football leagues, they are ready for you. Ball games on all the television sets all around the place. Great food, great sights. Hooters just makes you happy. The Saints are happy. Saints fans, for the most part, are happy. They've locked in with the best wide receiver in the game, according to Drew Brees. And we'll talk to Bob Rose of Canal Street Chronicles about that next here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helpert Show on 103.7 The Game.
And we welcome you back. Well, the New Orleans Saints back on the practice field. But on their day off, it was a monumental day for the Saints, a monumental day for a wide receiver who got congratulations across the board because, as they say, he earned his money the 504 way. Bob Rose, terrific writer for Canal Street Chronicles, kind enough to join us on his vacation to spend some time with us. How's vacation land, man? How are you?
I am very good, Jordy, and I appreciate you having me on. As far as vacation, it is wonderful, but it is way too short. I cannot get enough beach time. I'm a beach bum at heart.
I'm with you. I thought this would come to fruition. I didn't know if it would come now or maybe a little bit longer. But the Saints were the first to pay a quarterback $100 million, averaging $20 million a year, and Drew Brees back in 2012. Now they're the first to pay a wide receiver $100 million, averaging $20 million. I guess they send a message, right? If you produce, if you're a good locker room guy, if you're good in the community, we'll reward you.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. As you know, this is such a close-knit team. They have been through, Lord knows, they have been through a lot together in the last two seasons. And Mike is one of that team's leaders, not to mention one of the best receivers in the NFL. And he proved that. He's proven that really all 3 years of his career. And he keeps getting better and better. He led the league in nearly every major category last year. And look, I know a lot of Saints fans that are kind of down on the contract, and there aren't a lot of them, but they're saying the same thing. You know, how are we going to pay our other players? Look, when you have one of the greats, like you mentioned, when the Saints paid Drew, when you have one of the greats, you got to pay him to keep him. And you know, they have such a solid young nucleus, and they're being very selective with who they are paying. They re-upped Cam Jordan, as you know, and now they have Michael Thomas. I think Teron Armstead is locked up for the next few years. And, you know, they have a short list of, you know, really stars and budding superstars that they're gunning for next. But I think that this is a great decision, you know, for not only the team, but like you mentioned, the community. He is such a good worker, you know, is such a role model as an NFL player, as far as, you know, the type of man that you look up to. He doesn't cause any problems outside of the organization, and certainly doesn't cause any problems in the locker room, in addition to being a consistent producer on the field.
He does produce, has caught more passes in his first three seasons than any receiver in NFL history. But you got Kamara, you got Ramchick, you got Lattimore. They're all looming in the future. I guess, are the Saints hedging their bets that they're saying, look, Drew Brees isn't going to be around much longer. We're not going to have to pay a quarterback $20 million. We can get a quarterback a lot cheaper. And that's where we find the money to pay those guys? Is that how this works?
Yeah, I think that's exactly how it's going to work. And that, you know, a lot of us, and definitely us over at the Canal Street Chronicles, we've had discussions about exactly that point that you bring up. You know, Brees' contract is not going to be on the books forever. They're going to start all over at quarterback. But Jordy, you need a talented roster to bring a young quarterback into, you know, whomever that may be. Yeah, but with the way the NFL draft salary cap is structured now, if you do choose to draft one, you're not going to have to pay them a mint like we saw, you know, a handful of years ago. I'll use Sam Bradford when the Rams drafted him, for example. That contract handcuffed them for years. You know, now they can start all over like we talked about a second ago. You know, they can, you know, keep as much of that current nucleus around as they can, while they bring in a new quarterback, probably a youngster. You know, I suspect that they're going to draft one personally. But again, you're not going to have a $20 million quarterback on the books now.
Bros, Canal Street Chronicles, kind enough to join us. From what you have heard of training camp so far and talking with your colleagues, what's been most significant to you?
Emmanuel Butler, the undrafted free agent wide receiver, seems to really be standing out in practice. I've seen a few clips. He reminds a lot of us of Marcus Colston, and I know that's a big comparison and big shoes to fill. And plus, it's early in camp, as you know. You know, right, the Saints have always had camp darlings early on, but that young man is showing like he has the ability to grab onto a receiving spot. And you know, the other one is Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, and you know, mm-hmm. you and I have talked about him before.
Right.
You know, both he and Saquon Hampton, they are playing really well early on, and looking like that they're going to grab some spots in the Saints secondary and be some difference makers there. Other than that, the main storyline out of New Orleans training camp so far has just been the intensity. These first four practices in particular, they've gotten kind of chippy between the players. The Louisiana heat doesn't do them any favors either. But they look early on like they're going to have something to prove. So the intensity has really stood out to a bunch of onlookers as well.
I really believe the Saints could close camp, start the season this weekend, and be in great shape. They're a veteran club with great leadership, very, very few spots to fill. But those spots, the competition is there. But that just bodes well. It's curious how Sean Payton handles this training camp. He wants them to be in great shape. They know the playbook. You don't want to risk injury. So I'm curious how he handles the rest of this time.
Yeah, you and me both. I don't expect Brees to get very much playing time at all. You know, which will answer some questions at the backup quarterback spot, whether Teddy Bridgewater could be, in fact, the quote unquote quarterback, you know, next quarterback after Brees. So I think Bridgewater and Taysom Hill are both going to get a lot of snaps at quarterback. Like you pointed out, I wouldn't expect to see a lot of the starters get action, especially early on, which is pretty normal for a Sean Payton team anyway. But the back half of this roster is going to be so competitive for spots between the draft choices that they brought in and some undrafted guys that, you know, some of us have been really high on early on. He's going to give them a chance to really prove themselves, in addition to a veteran like Richard Matthews. Richard is trying to re-jumpstart his career after some early success, but in recent seasons he's been kind of down. He's going to have an opportunity to show Sean, offensive coordinator Pete Carmichaels, and the other coaches that he deserves to be on this team. Because if you look at Sean Payton's history, if it comes down to a veteran or a late round or undrafted young guy, Sean usually goes with the younger guy. So player, a veteran like Matthews is really going to have to show us something.
He is Bob Rose of Canal Street Chronicles, kind enough to join us. And the NFL Network came out with their top 100 players of 2019. Drew Brees, number two. Aaron Donald, number one. Brees, number two. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think for a change, I very rarely follow this top 100 thing, but I think for a change, the NFL Network and whatever processes go into to making up that list, they got it right in putting Brees so high. There has been other times in Drew's career where he has, in my opinion, deserved a top five or top three spot, but is certainly deserving. I was thrilled to see both Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara get top 20 rankings as well.
Number 13 and 14, respectively. Number 13 and 14,
Cam Jordan, in my opinion, should have been a little bit higher, and I would have liked to have seen an offensive lineman, either Ramchek or maybe Andres Pete, somewhere in that top 100. But like I said, I haven't paid a lot of attention in recent seasons to the top 100, but it is nice to see the some of the Saints stars get the recognition that they deserve.
Cam Jordan coming in at number 41. Brees, by all accounts and purposes, just keeps getting better and better. Are you in that camp that thinks that last year he had arguably his best season as an NFL quarterback?
I think the first half, if you would have asked me that in the first half of the season, I would have said unequivocally yes. I've never seen him be more accurate, and we're talking about one of, if not the most accurate quarterbacks in NFL history. The last part of the season, there was some mumblings that he might have been banged up. His shoulder might have gotten tweaked in that Atlanta game. In addition to the fact that the offensive line had some injuries across the front, especially over the last month, Brees didn't have nearly the time to go through his progressions as he did earlier in the season. I don't think personally that Drew regressed in the last half of the season. I just think that for the issues that I just mentioned, the offensive line, and he might have had a little bit of shoulder injury, it caused a decrease in his stats over that last month. But I think he's still playing near the very, very near the top of his game.
Here's Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicle. Saints back on the practice field. They had a day off yesterday. Of course, the big news, Michael Thomas, five-year, $100 million contract, 64, I think, of which has been guaranteed money. That's just good for – I'm all about players getting money. I'm all about it. If you can get it, go ahead and get it. Give me a name of a player that really needs to step up his game this year. And we keep talking about the offense, but, man, somebody on the defense got to step up. You can't keep outscoring people, you know. Sometimes, you know, Dallas, and we've seen it before, that when the defenses really get good, you got to be able to stop people. So who is the player that you're targeting that's really, really got to step it up this year?
Mine's a bit of a surprise, and it's Marshon Lattimore. Lattimore is one of my favorite Saints players, and I think he is an outstanding defensive back, one of the better all-around cornerbacks in the NFL. He's more than just a cover cornerback, as you know. But I thought, especially in the first half of the year last year, he came out of the gate a little bit slow. Now he stabilized his game, especially after New Orleans made that trade for Eli Apple. It gave him two solid bookend cornerbacks. But I would like to see a little bit more consistent play out of Lattimore because I don't have to tell you what kind of receivers exist through the NFC even the NFC South. And you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, you know, maybe speculating on who the next Saints guy is to get paid, be it Lattimore, Ramchek, Kamara, et cetera, et cetera. If Lattimore is going to be in that serious discussion, he has got to show that he is one of the top two or three cornerbacks in the NFL, and, you know, it showed the team and the organization why they invested the 11th overall selection in him 2 years ago. Look, it's not that he played poorly. It's just I don't think he played nearly as well as he did his rookie season. He was exposed a little bit, especially against Tampa Bay. And I'd just like to see him solidify his game in year three.
I'm with you. Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. There's a that one player that intrigues me because he's different, he's unique, and that's Cyril Grayson, the former track star for LSU that's out there trying to make the squad. Do you give him any chance? I mean, he's got speed beyond speed. Is there a niche for him on this club, or is it just too many people that are already entrenched that he's just going to, you know, maybe the practice squad?
No, I think he absolutely has an opportunity, and there couldn't be a better organization to get it done with. You know, you look through especially Sean Payton's history, but particularly in general the history of the New Orleans Saints. Running back and wide receivers are a position where late-round draftees or undrafted free agents can make big success. I mean, you look at Marcus Colston, Pierre Thomas, Willie Snead, I could go on and on. Lance Moore, I could go on and on, but those are just fine examples. And Grayson has shown he's shown some crispness in his pass patterns early on in camp that has really caught some people's eye. We knew he could fly, you know, which automatically gives him a step up against the average NFL wide receiver, that speed, that deep threat that every team craves. But if he shows that he can work in unison with Breeze, and he has shown that he has pretty good hands, if he can keep running those crisp patterns, I absolutely give him an opportunity to make this team.
Speed, speed, speed. Just stretch that defense so Breeze can knock it out. Isn't it time for Teron Armstead to have an injury-free year? I mean, goodness gracious, wouldn't that be amazing?
Oh, God, I certainly hope so, and this team is kind of dependent on it. You know, Teron has never played a full 16-game season and has missed 21 games in the last 2.5 years. And that's just not going to get it done. When he's on the field, he's one of the finest left tackles, one of the finest offensive linemen in the league. But if there's one spot that concerns me about this New Orleans Saints roster, it's the depth that they have at the offensive tackle positions. Mm-hmm. I'm not worried about offensive line interior, but if something happens to either Ramczyk on the right side or Armstead on the left side, as is his history, Coach Payton usually likes to move Andrus Peat out to from left guard to left tackle, which is a smart decision. But Peat isn't nearly as effective outside, and that also weakens their interior line. So it weakens you at two spots. Armstead is a key, or Armstead's health is a key. Now he's played through some injuries too, but he needs to be on the field.
Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. Who's the biggest competition for the Saints this year in the NFC South, in your opinion?
I got to go with Atlanta. You know, Kerry, this is going to be a very tough and competitive division, as it always is. I expect Tampa Bay to be improved, and they always have some frightening players at wide receiver, as most Saints fans know. Carolina is going to beat you up, which is going to keep them in every game. But Atlanta's roster is the only one in the division, in my opinion, that compares, even closely compares top to bottom, to what the Saints have. Atlanta took a defensive dip in the rankings last year, and they replaced their they fired their defensive coordinator, and head coach Dan Quinn, who is very much on the hot seat, is going to take over the defensive calling responsibilities, and he's, Lord knows, he's shown that he has had success in the past doing that. But a lot of people forget how many talented defenders that Atlanta had on injured reserve last year. You know, if those guys can stay healthy, I expect them to be better defensively. And they are one of the few teams in the NFL that can keep pace with the Saints offensively. I hate to say that because I do not like the Atlanta Falcons, but they are a dangerous team. And I definitely put them in the category of a playoff contender. Coming into the season, I would still give the nod to New Orleans over Atlanta and everybody else in the division. But the Falcons, I expect to be nipping at their heels most of the year.
All right, well, we've had a nice interview, so now the time is for you to flip over so you don't burn on that side. Open up another cold one and relax and enjoy. But thank you. So a deal that had to be done, and they got it done, and they missed very little time, and I don't think that Michael Thomas will skip a beat. He's already been catching passes today in his first day back. He and Drew Brees on the same page. So a good deal for everybody, right?
For sure, for sure. I think the Saints made the smart decision, and I'm with you. I never did expect Michael Thomas to miss very much time in training camp. I think most of us expected this deal to get done. I'm glad it has, and now everybody can go back to work for the ultimate goal.
Enjoy the rest of your vacation. We'll talk to you soon, Bob. Thank you so much.
For sure. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome, buddy. That's Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. Kind enough to join us today here on the Jordy Holtberg Show. We'll take a time out. We'll put the finishing touches with a little day in history, some birthday wishes, and set the stage for tomorrow when we return. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We are Acadiana's sports station. Oh, welcome back. You know that song, that means it's time to do our daily history lesson brought to you by DC's Little Capital X on I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Frankie's got everything for your travel needs and that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. Whoo, I'm telling you, that cheeseburger is unbelievable. DC's Little Capital X on I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobridge, my go-to stop. You got to try it. You'll make it yours as well. It was on this day, August 1st, the year 1978. Oh, we had a race. We had a race, and we thought the record might be broken. But Pete Rose's pursuit of Joe DiMaggio's hit streak ended at 44 when Braves reliever Gene Garber struck out Charlie Hustle on this day, August 1, 1978. I don't know if anybody will do it. I just don't. What's more formidable? Is it the Cal Ripken Jr. record or Joe DiMaggio? Cal Ripken Jr. Nobody will ever play that many games, right? Nobody will ever play that many games. All right, birthday wishes. If today, August the 1st, is your day, happy birthday from all of us at 103.7 The Game and everybody under the Delta Media umbrella. You share your birthday with the likes of big leaguer Adam Jones, who turns 35 years old today. And happy 31st birthday to Madison Bumgarner. Yes, indeed. Happy 31st. So if it's yours, lots of cake, lots of ice cream, lots of fun. If it is your anniversary today, well, happy anniversary from all of us to all of you. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Special thanks to all of our guests. Tomorrow's a very busy day. It's time to look all the work that has led up to this point in time. Now is when team gets together and it's time to go to work. Regular season's not that far away. Not that far away. So we'll have reports on the Tigers, the Cajuns, the Saints, and all that coming your way tomorrow. We only have one of these Thursdays, August the 1st, so hope you have a great rest of your afternoon and evening. Hope you come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Until then, it'll be Friday. I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.